Today is November 14th. We're taping Couples in Tanakh. There's no question that the Tanakh, certainly this part of the Torah, seems to be male-centric. That Yaakov only had 70 descendants? Really? 70 children and grandchildren? And among all those 70 was just Yocheved and Sarah, Basasher, and Dina, right? So, if just statistically, to have 70 descendants and have 67 men, boys, and 3 girls is just so astronomical as to never possibly happened. So some of Farshim tell us, like even Ezra and others, that Yaakov had many daughters and many grand. In fact, it says, one pasuk it says, his sons and his daughters came to console him for the loss. That's not a medrash, that's a pasuk. His sons and his daughters came to console him, and he could not be consoled for the loss of Yosef. So, we get it. The Tanakh mentions men much more than they will mention women. Men are counted in Bamidbar, women are not counted. Soldiers are counted. We can discuss the varying degrees of what Mefarshim say of why this is so, but it happens to be a fact. There are still some Mefarshim that do say that Yaakov Taka only did have 67 boys and 3 girls, and that's the way it was. If there were more girls, they would have been mentioned. Okay, I'm only telling you this because one might also come up the impression that the woman comes into the story in Sefer Bereishis in one realm and one realm only. It's with respect to directing the family or naming children or the like. I would like to show that this is not necessarily the case, not in the Torah, not in Tanakh in general, but before I get there, I'd like to point to this fascinating review in Commentary Magazine this past month. And it is a review of some recent Broadway hits that have changed a general genre of the woman's place in the world. It showed that in Broadway and in movies until the 40s and 50s and 60s, what is the general, I don't know enough shows to mention names, but you know, it's a woman who finds herself and she finds romantic love and she settles down with the boss's son and she's, you know, she ends up getting her dream job and you know, and I think in all Disney movies she finds her prince and goes happily ever after. And a lot of these films are about the woman and maybe the main, you know, it's Sleeping Beauty, it's The Little Mermaid, it's Cinderella, Snow White, it's all. She may be the star of the movie, but it's all about her meeting that romantic love and moving off into the sunset. The point of the article was to show that in more recent times, there's a whole genre of women who find themselves without necessarily coming to that. They mentioned about 6 or 7. I really didn't know what anything more about, but that's if you know what's currently going on Broadway, maybe you can corroborate what I'm saying. So here, listen to an interesting thing. And this we said when we learned the 7 Neviot, if you recall, a few years ago, is that in the ancient world, if a woman wanted a role outside of the traditional family, she could not have a traditional family while pursuing that role. Right? In other words, you know, you had to choose. You want to be a prophetess? You want to be a priestess? You are either owned by all the men of the town, but you certainly don't have the right to have your own family and raise your own nuclear situation there. So what's interesting is that in our Tanakh there are 7 women who distinguish themselves. It sounds like Dr. Sidorsky. So in just a second. Sorry to interrupt. Okay. So in our Tanakh, the 7 women who distinguish themselves in this type of leadership. Let's Devorah, called Miriam, Esther, things that people like that. So they are Dafka, the Tanakh goes out of its way to tell us that in addition to this position of leadership, that they were married. It goes out of its way to tell us, do we really care what Huldah's husband's name was? Why does the Tanakh tell us that Huldah's husband? It's really trying to tell us that Huldah was married. And it's a little awkward just to say Huldah was married. It's just a lot easier to just say Huldah's husband was blank. Or the same goes for Devorah. Why should they? Ashes Lapidos? Does the Tanakh tell us the wife's name of every leader? No, it's trying to tell us that Devorah was married. That's the point. So this is an interesting point of how the Tanakh allows women to basically have that leadership position, but also have a family life. The priestesses of old were they had plenty to do with a lot of the men in their culture, or they were just set aside for their God alone. Okay, so this is my introduction. So now we let's complete our open up. Let's open up the gracious. Now, last week's parsha before that, what we just read, this Beth Shabbos, we read about the destruction of a full line of the world. Adam has two sons. There's Cain and Hevel, and then a third son, Shace, right? Hevel is certainly wiped out. But it would appear that Cain as well was wiped out, because Noach is a direct descendant of Shace, right? But not so fast, say Chazal. We are descendants of both Cain and Shace, because
Na'amah,
right, as Leon points out, Na'amah is a direct descendant of Cain, and Chazal do indicate that Na'amah was Noah's wife. So there is a remnant of both the both these lines. Now there go Chazal and their sort of sexism again, right? If Na'amah is mentioned, she must be mentioned because there's something special about her, right? Otherwise, why mention that Tuval Kayan had a sister? It must be that she had something special about her, right? Okay, but we admit that's going on at that time. So yes, she is indeed Noah's wife. Okay, and that's an important connecting line to Kayan. Now, what I'd like to do is still I want to concentrate on that couple back to the generation of Cain. Let's take a look at Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Cain is banished for what he did to his brother, right? There's nothing in the Torah that tells us what this loss meant to the parents. We have to just look up in the Medrash about that. And the minute that he is cast away from his surroundings as a result of his sin, it says, Vayeda Kayin es ishto, Vatahar vatelet es chanoch, etc., etc. Vayeda Kayin es ishto. In other words, it's ishus. He didn't just go to any old woman. He had a wife. Now, there's a big problem as far as the Pshuto Shamikra is, because this wife hasn't been identified, and there hasn't been any, even a reference to another birth. A biblical reader might think that the next child is Shace, is Adam and Chava's third child, right? So who did Cain, who is Cain's wife? Right? Okay, so there. I mean, you have Rashi, who says in a number of places in this parish of the Torah, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. World was created through Chesed. So okay, Chesed means what? When Avraham tells his Sarah in this week's parsha, Vayera, do me this Chesed, say that you are my sister. But that's not the least of it. In Parshas Kedoshim, what does it say? Says that do not sleep with your sister. That would be chesed. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have to reevaluate maybe what we think Milus Chesed is in general, but it could still be a wonderful thing. But it's something. It's not just loving kindness. It's not just deeds of incredible goodness. No, it's something that bursts out of expectation. Goes beyond the pale of the norm. Tzedakah you can legislate. That's tzedek, but you can't legislate Chesed. All right. So Chesed is how Cain populates the world with a sister. Right? That's for the biblical reader. Okay? I remind you of something I think we did, not this time around, but in a previous discussion you once had about Rav Soloveitchik's understanding of the difference between the Adam in Perek Aleph and the Adam in Perek Bet. Are you familiar with this? Mm-hmm. Should I just repeat it just briefly?
Repeat it.
Right? Yeah. The Adam in Perek Aleph is... You know, the Rav allowed for a very slow creation of the universe. Each day is 3 billion years. Day 5, with very large animals, could have lasted, you know, hundreds of millions, if not much more than that, much more time. So the universe could be as old as the scientist wants to say it is, and fit it into the ways that Chazal say Hashem created the world. So too, he created man slowly. Right? And Adam in Perek Aleph doesn't have a soul, doesn't care about one woman, goes from woman to woman like any other creature in the world, may have an instinct for young, but not an instinct for love. So it doesn't have a Ruach Chaim, he's not separated from that woman because he doesn't care about it, he doesn't miss that woman. Only Adam in chapter 2 misses that woman. Right? He has intelligence, he names the animals by showing he is above the animals, but as opposed to the Adam in chapter 1 is not necessarily so much about the animals. I'm just allowing this. You don't like this, by all means. I'm just referring to this. So Cain, of course, is of this after this second realm, and he has an Isha. There's Ishus. I know the Rambam writes in Hilchos Ishus, the beginning of Hilchos Ishus, that until Matan Torah, you know, if you there was Ishus. It wasn't bound by a contract, right? You didn't have a shtar and a ksuva and a get. You just said, okay, you're with me. Now you're not with me. But it was still by all means Ishus, right? Hashem, Avram is before Matan Torah, and Hashem tells Avimelech, put down that woman. She's a Bula's Baal. She's an Ishus Ish, right? Well, last week with Paro. All right, I just didn't say, in case someone was going to cop me and say what the Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchos Ishus. He says there's no contractual Ishus, but there certainly is Ishus, right? So it says that Cain knew his Ishto. So that could be, you know, some very close chromosomes. So it is, and then she, Batilid es Chanoch. Right, so she has this. This is another line that comes out of Cain, right? A line, as we just intimated, will survive through Naama, right? And then take a look, please, with me in the pasuk Yud Tet. It goes through a line of seven generations, right? Goes through a line of seven generations, and then the seventh generation gets to a man named Lemech. Mm-hmm. Right? And Pasuk Yud Tet says, Vayikach lo Lemech shtei nashim. Lemech had two wives, Shem ha'achas Oda, v'shem ha'shenis Tzila. Rashi, of course, darshans out these names. Why would someone at this point, just based on the three or four psukim that we just mentioned, why darshan these names? Remember again, I say, based on the three or four psukim we just looked at. It didn't mention Cain's wife's name. Right? There's something significant about these names. Yeah. Right? So Rashi darshans that he had one wife for beauty and one wife for children. As if though those two couldn't be the same. Right?
Really?
Shema achas Oda v'shem ha'shenis Tzila. V'teled Oda es Yavo huwaya avi yoshev ohel mikneh. Right, but this is all for naught because Tzila also has a baby. They both give birth, right? But what happens is really I think there's another point going on that doesn't have to do so much with couples. is that what these children start to represent is man's search for self-aggrandizement and for purpose in finding just the self-purpose, not how am I going to make my surroundings better. What makes me say that? What makes the commentary say this? Is that it fits with early man who is just interested in na'aseh lanu shem, to be anshei Hashem, to be giborim, to be the nefilim, the bnei Elohim who inflict their will upon the poor b'nos ha'adam, and they're just early man is gone amok with not just self-preservation, because it's probably a very dangerous world, right? But with self-aggrandizement, and this is why the Torah tells us this is the first person to carve out a musical instrument, this is the first person to make a tool of war. Now, those things could be also to help mankind. Then say the first person to sow wheat, the first person to make a kiln to heat food or something like that. You know? Anyway, I'm just saying that some commentaries see this as fitting in with the early picture of man, which naturally leads into the story of the great deluge, in which God says man has taken too big a piece of the cosmic pie. I'm willing to share much of that cosmic pie, but when man takes it the way he's taking it, and they inflict pain upon each other, and gezel upon each other, and chamas upon each other, I will not allow this to continue. And then when all that is done, they do it again, v'naseh lanu shem, and they, right, and until Abraham comes, who is decidedly vayikra v'shem Hashem. Yes?
This is neither here nor there, but you're talking about something I noticed is at the end of the Parsha, where God decides to destroy the earth, he keeps using Hashem, 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 as opposed to Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very interesting.
Rashi definitely, you should know Rashi, at the end of Bereishis and the beginning of Noach, discusses this. Yes, of the preponderance throughout Parshas Bereishis and Noach of whole sections that now read these ten psukim, only Elohim, this parak, only Yud Kei Vav Kei, this parak, and it is, I think Rashi may have already been aware of what the Bible critics would say about that 800 years later.
It just seems to me that when they're talking about their different talents, that we see the differentiation among men, that the men are not all the same, that some have a talent for this, some have a talent for
fair
that.
Fair enough. Okay, fair enough. That's certainly one of many possibilities of what's happening here. And it mentions a host to Hokayin is Na'ama. Okay, now let's talk about Lamech's two wives. What's happening here? Right. So Lamech is telling his wives, Odav et Zila, right? The order in which they mentioned before. Shman koli nishe Lamech. Ha'azena imrasi. Look at that, he writes like Parshas Hazinu. He's quite poetic. Ki ish harakti lifitz'i v'yeled l'chaburasi. Ibn Ezra discusses the you know, it's one thing when the Torah says im shamoa tishma'u, but we see people talking that way. You see in Bereishis people talking using that double lashon, right? So you see they're poetic, they're quite poetic. Or is it just the author that gives poetry to what he said? It doesn't matter. It's just that he says, listen to me, what my wives. Ki ish harakti lefitz'i v'yeled lachaburasi. I killed a man either because of my wound, and a child because of
something,
it's obviously parallel to PT. Yeshiva Sayim Yukam Koyin. Kayin, we're the seventh generation. Actually, if you count Kayin as one, we're number eight. So seven generations of Kayin have survived. The Lamech Shivim V'Shiva. So, this on one level, it seems that he's comparing himself to something Kayin did. Kayin did something and got seven. I did something and I should get 77. But the women somehow, He has to convince them of something.
Is it a question, have I? Because in the English it's have I.
Ki isharakti lefitzi v'yela v'chaburasi. Because the English there was reading like Rashi. It says that the women separated from him. He committed some kind of crime, he killed someone, he killed actually Cain, according to Rashi. But I want to say, I think there's something much greater going on here. You see, it seems that Lamech's wives have departed from him. They've separated from him. There's something that they don't want. Well, and there's something that he wants. This is going to replay itself many times in history between husbands and wives, maybe. But it's something that replays itself in the next generation. I'll come back to this. When Noach and his family are told to alight the Teva, we're never told Noach's wife's name or anything about her, except this Maamar Chazal that says her name is Naama. Now let's take a look at three very interesting psukim in the flood story. Start with Perek Zion, Pasuk Zion. I'm going to start with Rashi, then I'm going to conclude with the Kliyot. Look at Perek Zion, Pasuk Zion. It says, "Vayavon Noach uvanav v'ishto uneshevanav ito el hateva." Noach came or went. Noach and his sons, and his wife and his sons' wives, with him to the teva, mipnei mehamabul, either expecting or because of the waters of the flood. Okay, so there might be nothing at this point yet to comment, except for the fact that in Perek Chet, Pasuk Tet Zion, when it's time to alight from the Teva, 8:16, Perek Chet, Pasuk Tet Zion, 8:16,
Eight
paragraphs. 16. Oh, right here. Thank you. So Hashem tells them, "Say minateva ato v'ishtecha uvanecha uneshevanecha." You have to write to make a chart to see how this has changed, right? Okay, this is Pashut Ma'od. Everybody knows this. Rashi, you learned this in third grade. Rashi does this all over his Perush, things like this. When B'nai Reuven and God say we'd like to build fences for our cattle and cities for our children, and we'll help you to prosecute the battles over Canaan, and then we'll return. So Moshe tells them a whole list of instructions, and then Moshe switches, right? What does he say?
Cities for children.
Cities for children, and fences for cattle. Says it, don't make the Ikar the Tophel, and the Tophel the Ikar. Okay, so I can point to 10 other Rashis like this. He's a very close reader. He doesn't think that these things just happen haphazardly, where someone might have just inadvertently switched an order. We tend to do these things ourselves, but this is a holy Torah, and the Torah should be taken more seriously than just saying, well, that's the way they happen to go on the ark, and that's the way they happen to go off the ark. The Torah doesn't just tell us information. The Torah tells us information we need to know. When it tells us more information than we need to know, you can always count on a good Rashi or Medrash to tell you why. Why didn't Avraham's servant why didn't it say that he gave her gifts? Why did that have to tell her how many coins, how many rings, how many how much the earrings weighed? Right? If not to give something symbolic. Now, you may not like the symbol that Rashi, or the Medrash for that matter, attributes to it, but at least what they're trying to say is, you give me this information, there must be something additional here. So Adkan Rashi, we all know, they go on the ark, men and men, women and women, they leave the ark, husband and wife, husbands and wives. So good. So this Rashi, the Rashi's greatness is that he notices this, that tells us the Medrash. He didn't 98% of Rashi is just rehashing an older Medrash. But Rashi is the moral arbiter who tells us why. He says, Kol ha'olam shuriyim batzar. You do not, this is not a year of just, getting close.
Yom Kippur.
It's, yeah, okay. All right. Plus, I'm destroying humanity. Don't create mankind.
On the ark.
Okay. All right, but here is the rub. Here's the problem. This is what the Kli Yakar points out. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Chet. why didn't Rashi tell us this? I'm going to find it out, Rashi. I'm reading the Parsha this week. I'm going to read it. It's two psukim away. Look what the Torah says about the way they left the Teva.
Verse 18.
So forget right now about the syntactical anomaly. This parsha is so filled with grammatical inconsistencies. It's crazy. There are more inconsistencies than consistencies.
Singular verbs.
Constantly have singular verbs with plural nouns. Right? But that's going on all over the Torah. Vayushav Moshe Aaron, Vayava Moshe Aaron, Vayichahein Noam Elazar v'Itamar, right? Asher Milei Yado, Asher Milei Yadom. It's all over the place. That one's really awful because it should be plural feminine and it's singular masculine. So what's going on? So there are generally two approaches when we have this problem. I'm going to first discuss the grammatical problem, then we'll go back to our issue of what we could do with Pasuk Yud Chet, since it just seems to defy Rashi, no? Mm-hmm. Isn't Rashi fair with Pasuk Yud Chet?
Yeah.
Right?
Because it changes it back to the...
It changes it back to the way they went on.
Right.
Right? Okay, so let's first do the syntactical issue. Is when you have a Pasuk like Vayikach Shem Vayefes Es Hasim Lo Vayechu Achoranit This Ervas Avihem Lo Ra'u, right? It says, and Shem and Yefet took the blanket and covered their father, and they didn't see their father's nakedness, right? So, what's the syntactical anomaly? It shouldn't be by Yikach Shem by Yefet, it should be Yichu. So, here are generally two approaches that we take to these anomalies. One, such as in the beginning of Perek Gimel and Bamidbar, there's like three or four plural subjects with singular verbs talking about Aaron's sons. So the answer is, okay, Elazar and Tamar were acting as one. They were not separate. Maybe that was not even a view's problem. I don't know. But the point is that when you have this, especially with Moshe and Aaron, who Moshe Aaron, who Aaron Moshe, you get the picture. They're acting as one. They're acting as a unit. They're unified, so the verb unifies them. Fine. But in some instances, it's because only one of them is really acting and the other one is just coming for the ride. That's what actually Rashi says on the Pasuk Vayikach Shem Vayefet. Why not just say they acted as one?
Well, the chef suggested this one.
How do you know that? You read it in the Ben Gracious
Rabbah? The first one.
Yefet is older than Shem. Okay, fair enough.
He's blessed more.
Right, because when Noach rises from his drunken stupor, he only blesses Shem, and Yefet is like an afterthought. Now look, that can be, maybe he did bless Yefet just as much, it's just that the Torah, which was not given to the descendants of Yefet, it was just given to the descendants of Shem, decided, you know what, I'm going to edit out all those blessings for Yefet, because I don't really care about Yefet. I don't know any portion who say this, but...
But then you have the problem with the Esav, because Esav is also getting the...
Yefet is not blessed because Noach just got the word that it was really Shem who did everything. And Yefet
became the Shem Kohen Gadol.
Okay, so what Rashi's impetus to say this is together with Vayikach Shem Vayikach in the singular, together with the fact of the blessing later. Okay, so that's the syntactical issue, and the issue here is that really only one person, either they're going on in office as a unit, but that's Dafka not, doesn't appear to be going, what's happening here. Or Rashi himself says, only one of the people who went on the ark really deserved to go on the ark.
Well,
doesn't say his family was Tamim. Just a little bit of a cloak.
You know?
A little cloak, just cut over that. Thanks. Yeah, I'm just going to have a little bit to keep. Wake up a little bit.
Okay. Oh, right, you like.
It's all right.
So who is saying doesn't deserve,
No one.
Everybody but Noah?
Yeah. So but they helped build the ark, so it wouldn't be fair that they don't get to go on.
No.
Get percentage.
Okay. Just let Noah go on with his wife and start all over. Okay. Let's not go there. But so what do you do with pasuk Yudchet? It says Vayetze Noach uvanav veishto uneshevanav, and then we'll take it back to Lamech.
They separated.
Why? They were given permission to go procreate again. What are they telling us here?
They weren't given permission until after.
Yeah. Were they
all
in the
temple? No, we say no. Before this one.
Well, Hashem has to tell them.
Okay, so the Kli Yakar suggests the following, that early man saw, and this is definitely corroborated by ancient sources, that an ancient Sumerian felt himself a nothing but a dead fly and a dog as far as his the good graces of his God, and if I don't feed my God with the kind of strengthening foods that my high priest tells me he likes, in some societies that could be my firstborn, in some societies that could be a human being on the spring or winter or fall equinox, in some societies it's animals or grain or wine or blood or other things like that. So I strengthen my God that way, and I'm a total non-issue. There's no Tzelem Elokim concept in any other nation.
According to Chinese, human beings are fleas from their God,
Fleas from the
God, right. Body.
Right. Fleas. So as such, ancient men, and in these early stories, but pre-Abraham, can fit that like a T, is that they're so worried of another deluge or another, or that God is capable of just wiping us out, so just with one swift wave of the hand, that the Kli Yakar suggests that even with the permission to repopulate the world, Noach and his family were apprehensive for the fear that a destruction like why neleid la rikve neleid la behala. Right. So why should we?
That doesn't go together with the idea that they built the Migdal Babel later, and where the Nasel Anushem.
They might have changed by then, but look, Noach built the Teva. He obviously Hashem. He should have felt that God has some plans for me, you know, right? Like when Manoach saw the angel, he said, "Oh, now we're both going to die." And his wife says, "Dummy, you think we're going to die? God just, he told us we're going to have a son, and he's going to save us from the Philistines." Right, so surely Noah was fulfilled if he has some kind of mission, but early man just feels, this is again the Kli Yakar, just feels we're so helpless and we're so, look how things can be wiped out just like this. And by the way, it is, and Soloveitchik is written on this, is that it's good to have this realization. One pocket has I am dust and ashes, the other pocket has a sign that says for Bishvilini Vrahola. But that you want to start worrying about all the one of those asteroids between Mars and Jupiter breaking free and making its way here, and there are billions of them too. So someone's taking care of us. Don't get crazy, right? Someone's looking after us. But when you're constantly worried every morning, and that you have to start now offering sacrifices to a God that without that good grace. That star may break free, so people are going to be apprehensive. They might refrain from having children in the first place. And this Chazal say is what Oda and Sila were worried about.
So why did one son decide that he's not going to? If this was the protocol, why did he go ahead and do that to his father?
Again, this is afterwards. This is in the next chapter.
Next one.
But this is obviously Hashem talks to them, as Igor just mentioned. He's about to tell them, as if to say, "I know what's on your mind, eight human beings left around here. This is not going to happen. I'm not going to destroy you again. I want you to pruvu. I'm holding you responsible for your lives, as if though these are all the things that got you in trouble the last time. You're not animals that they instinctively kill each other. This is not your instinct. I told Cain that I hold him responsible for killing Hevel, even though ostensibly there's no passage before that that says that if there's anything wrong with that. So remember, again, the Kli Yakar who says... But just a commercial, by the way. That's our parshan on Shabbos morning. If you want to come and learn at 8:30, so he understands that when Hashem told him "A hevel ochicha," his response. Remember, the Torah doesn't have punctuation, but there's a little problem with him grammatically because the hey has a chatef patach on it. But he says "Lo yadati hashomer ochi anochi." Not "Lo yadati hashomer ochi anochi." No, "Lo yadati hashomer ochi." I didn't know I'm supposed to, you know. I'll tell you what I did, God. You know what I did? You know, that brother of mine, I brought the korban first. And I brought flax or whatever, I brought something from the ground. And he brought an animal. Okay, so you liked him more. Well, I beat him. Because you know what I did? I brought him as a korban to you.
How did you connect Ada and
Sila
to this?
So the Bracious Rabbah says that Ada and Sila didn't want to have children with Lemech because he had just committed two murders, apparently. Pesach and Mechabura. And this guy's kids going to kill our children. He's killing. Right? He killed Cain and he killed one of their children.
Right.
This is how the Medrash works.
Maybe the Greek mythology. By the corners eating their children.
Okay.
I hope you're wearing any of the commentaries mention this, but because he says if Cain dies, it said seven generations, so one lived for 77, right? And he lived 777 years.
And you're mixing up this Lamech with the other Lamech.
Is it different? Never mind.
Sorry, no, but it's a great comment. I'm sorry, I don't mean to shoot you down so quickly.
Is that
but the names of Cain's descendants sound alarmingly similar to the names of Shait's descendants. I'm not going to go where the critics go with that, but there is a Lemech on both sides. Okay, Noach's father is Lemech. This is the Lemech on Cain's side, which would all have been wiped out unless we agree that this Naama has some Cain blood in her, some from that.
Yeah, so the Musa, that's a miracle to name the people who the name of the deceased. Yeah.
And there is in the Zohar, by the way. I usually Zohar for you, but in the Zohar, Cain and Hevel were conceived before the chait. So Cain and Hevel have like the serpent's poison in them. Not Shais, because Shais is afterwards. So even though the story of Cain and Hevel's birth comes after the Gan Eden, but it's the story is Adam Yoda Eschava Ishto. Not Vayeda Adam Eschava Ishto. Adam Yoda means it had happened. And this was a big Christian Jewish polemic, you know, because Christianity felt that you couldn't they couldn't have such a conception before the original sin. But we were very, very careful. We talked about this book, Elucidarium, last year, go find. So this Latin book written in the Middle Ages by a church father about the original sin. So therefore, it would appear that the flood eradicated all of Cain's, that poison from Cain beforehand. And it's the flood finished it. But according to the opinion that Naama is from Cain's line, there is still a little nachash poison in mankind, and the Zohar uses that to explain some of other mankind's failings in the rest of Bereishis and Adon. Okay, so what does Noach do when he gets off the Teva? He gets drunk. He sees all this destruction. Does he? You see, Chazal, a lot of these things come in because Chazal are asking real live parshanut questions, such as why does every single person mentioned between Noach and Avraham, does it say he lived so many years, he had so many children, Vayolad Banim Uvanot, Vayolad Banim Uvanot, Vayolad Banim Uvanot, except Noach? Noah waits much longer to have children than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is having 120, 150, 210, and he was waiting until 500.
Because he saw what happened.
Okay, fair enough. Rashi said, mentions that. But that it doesn't say Vayelad Banim Vanot afterwards. So Rashi responds, and Rashi tells us that's because Chum rendered an ability in Noah to father another child. Right? Rashi uses that to explain a few other points in the story about why he curses Canaan and not Chum, etc. But I would just give this simple answer of why he curses Canaan but not Chum. It's because when all three boys left the Teva, it says, and God blessed Noah and his sons. Noah doesn't want to curse someone that God blessed. So he curses not Chum, but he curses Chum's sons. But why Canaan? Canaan is his fourth son. So that Rashi answers, you kept me from having a fourth son, I'll curse your fourth son. An answer I would give, and this one I feel a lot more comfortable giving this answer than what I said before about Yefet. You tell me why it's Canaan who's cursed. Along the lines of what I said before about why Yefet's...
The Mawanim should be cursed.
Namely?
They're the ones who were inhabiting the land.
Right. The Jews reading this for the first time are about to enter the land of Israel. So if Noah cursed Chum's family, right, would he have to curse him? Curse Cush, Fut, Mitzrayim, and... Curse Chum, curse Canaan, and that's enough. I mean, curse Mitzrayim too, because they just left Egypt. So Egypt is not important for us anymore. We left Egypt. Egypt is behind us. Canaan is in front of us. So just know, or we're Canaan from the very outset. Okay, all right. So that is the early fear of propagating the species. And it could be that Noah, when he leaves the Teva, like I said, he gets drunk. He's trying to console it was not all roses and birds chirping and I don't know if you can remember, is William Tell?
It takes time to have
things. How long does it take time? He just brought a sprig with him and then they make grapes and what?
Okay.
What's the timeline?
I don't know. However long you want it to.
It's got to grow.
Okay.
It's a miracle.
It could be that he took soil with him. He had a plant in
Rabbi, you're not. The three grows in one day.
Okay. Whoever made the flood and keep all those animals in the small dimensions mentioned in the
one
verse is no.
Make wine and grow.
Okay, it's much more than just that. Okay, all right. So that is where Noah tries to drown his sorrow, and that leads to his other problem with Chum. So then what that leads into is the story of Migdal Bavel. And I'll close with this for today, and then this will be our introduction to Avram for next week, and we'll be just very well suited to discuss Avram and Sarah. And there's lots there. Is that we discussed the a lot of what we discussed even tonight has to do with man's very, very stark competitive spirit. We are a very competitive species. Animals, I'm sure, are competitive as well. These bonobo monkeys are—they compete for very much for sometimes the attention of a female or bragging rights or other things like that. All animals do that. But anyone who's ever had two children, usually of the same gender, close in age, and give your grandchildren each two jelly beans, and they're all very happy, but let one of them know that someone else has three, and they're not happy anymore, right?
Yeah.
So, and on. So we see the story of the competitive spirit and how damaging it could be. You know, competition brings out very good things in products, but sometimes very bad things in people. Of what Cain was ready to do to Hevel, just over getting what? Getting what? A bone? What were you going to get? What did he get? I don't even know what God gave Hevel. Okay, God, you know, give it to Cain. Give him the same thing. No, this is a meritocracy. and you have to deserve it. I'm not going to give him, remember what the Gemara calls lechem kisufa, the bread of shame. Right? And it's undignified. Not for God can do whatever he wants, obviously. I'm going to tell God that you shouldn't just tell kind, you know what? You got a brother, great carbon too. Here's a cloud, and here's Australia. Right? So you know, they were arguing over, you know, real estate, the Gemara says. So here's Europe. So God knows how to avoid the first fratricide, right? But that's not dignified, right? We don't deserve the bread of shame, and God doesn't give it to us, right? Certain governments in this world today want to give it out, but that's a different thing. Government wants you to be more beholden to it than we're supposed to be to God. Right, so, just remember, a government that could give you anything is the same government that could take it all away. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu says it. You know, I want you to deserve it, Kain. So, pick yourselves up by the bootstraps. So, I told you, I asked you, I gave you a homework assignment last week. I think no, I asked you where are the places where it says the word teshuka. Teshuka is in chapter 3, where it says ve'eli sheikh teshuka seich. Chapter 4, where it says, Hashem tells Kayan, your Yetzer Hara has a tshuka for you, not vice versa. 3 was Shir HaShirim, where the woman says, my beloved has a tshuka for me. Nefesh Shokeka means a great desire. The fourth one is very interesting. It's a personification. It's the tshuka of rain it says pregnate the earth, that's the lashon it says, the holy dove, you hear me, right? So laharvot et haaretz, right, the kosi rivaya, right? So there is it's almost like a natural teshuka. The rain just wants to do it, right? It's just a natural event. So it's natural that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in us a teshuka. Right? Okay, but here it is. We have this teshuka is also to be competitive to gain favor. We could be like dogs. A dog wants favor. What's his favor for? Of another biscuit. Right? Maybe a scratch behind the ear, I don't know. Right? So we can also be trained for different types of reward systems, right? Again, the Tanakh doesn't even have to tell us what was the reward. Kayan noticed that Hevel got something. It says Ve'el Hevel Kayan Ve'el Mitchaso Lo Shaw Isha. It doesn't even say what that is, right?
The so Kayan came down and ate his. And
yeah, okay, all right, okay, get on with it, you know. No, I'm just saying, Kayan, come on, stop being a baby,
right?
All right, So what I was saying before about a half hour ago is that's what all those people inventing those things and all the people mimicked up over the world, they're all out for their competitive spirit. So Rashi explains Migdal Bavel as competition with God. I prefer to say something else. I have a different read on this.
They were up to fight with them.
Good, that's Rashi. I understand. And
the literal.
Okay.
The literal. Shot
it,
they didn't want to spread out, they wanted it to...
It's Rabban, yes. Pen Nafutz is a direct violation of Pruavu Umilu et Haaretz. And the Ben Ezra intimates as well. Have you ever heard, you know, there was Nechama Leibowitz's brother, Yeshaya Leibowitz. Mm-hmm. Have you ever met him?
I did meet him, yes.
Yeshaya Leibowitz,
his daughter, too.
Yeah. So he lived to a very, very ripe old age. You may not have liked his politics. He was in a certain brand of politics that was very fiery. But he was really, he gave a brilliant radio address every Thursday night in Israel. And a number of years of those addresses have been now transcribed into they're called Notes on the Parsha.
Yeah.
And I have one of the first few hundred that were printed. It's amazing. They wrote notes, N-O-A-T-S, on the Parsha, the very first edition, and they stopped the presses, and they corrected it, but I was able to get one of those. Some people collect those crazy kind of... I have one of the Rabbi Chosid 500, the original 500, before Rav Moshe's tshuva made him pull out some pages about what David HaMelech did to some psukim in the Torah and put it in Tehillim. So he agreed to pull out those pages and put in new pages. But if you haven't written, you know, one of the other ones, no one, but those few hundred people who own it care too much about it. But you have these books that have these, you know, these first editions where a certain mistake was made, or maybe you have the Newsweek that has President Clinton on the cover. So or maybe the Dewey Wins paper, you know, or Richard Gephardt, remember where the one of the papers put him as that he won the primary, or that he would be chosen as the vice president, something like that. But they made such a awful mistake, and it involved Dick Gephardt, I remember. Anyway, so Maisa, Yeshaya Leibowitz says on the Migdal Bavel that it's the exact opposite of all this. Migdal Bavel is the exact opposite of competition. Exactly. He said, let's try the opposite, a cooperative.
Everybody was doing the same thing.
And Hashem says, I'm against that as much as I'm against, because that's North Korea. That's been tried. It doesn't work. And I would say it's probably the same genre as the Midrash you remember learning in fourth grade, that if you passed by Sodom and you wanted to stay there, they'd put you on a bed. Remember that?
Yeah.
What does that mean? They chop you off your feet, they stretch you out and put you on the rack. What does that mean? Everybody in Sodom has to be the same size.
Oh.
And what?
Everybody has to be the same size. You have to be, you know what?
Oh, right.
You have to be the same mind. This is North Korea, and it's Hashem doesn't like that either. So this is how Yishai Leibowitz presents it. He says there's no greater tyranny than to be exactly the same. And we're going to now start next week is really the nitty gritty where we get to Sarah and Avraham, because Adam and Chava are not really such, you know, they're not such established personas that we can really analyze. But now we're really getting into the fact that people are different. Excuse me. Migdal Bavel is right before Avraham because the Torah does not want to force everyone into this tyrannical state of Safar Chasud V'machadim. Yes, unification is good. We can have it together with diversity. And that's why we have 12 tribes. We're going to start with this Mitzvah next week. We have Mara.